America, and welcome to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Sologi. Say hi, people.
Hey.
Hello.
Yeah, you'll notice Teresa isn't with us tonight. That's mostly because she kind of screwed up her back while moving furniture, so...
Yeah.
Even if she was honest, she'd probably be completely loopy from the painkillers, so... Mm.
Which, well, she's on muscle relaxers, so I think she'd fit right in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, hey.
I'm drunk. Brandon, you're probably drunk.
I'm working on it.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten there yet, but
we got plenty
certainly
of show.
Working towards it.
Yes.
So. But, I mean, this is pretty much, this and Saturday are pretty much the only nights I drink anyway.
So. Yeah.
And I'm already feeling it clearly because I was on the wrong show notes.
Whoops.
Okay,
but,
that's better.
So this week some shit went down.
Yeah, that seems to happen every week, but...
Yeah, but this one in particular was kind of a shit sandwich. Mm. And not like a normal sandwich, like a Dagwood sandwich. Mm. You know, the... Where it's like multiple bread slices, and it's like as tall as a refrigerator.
Hmm. Yeah.
That type of that type
fresh
of shit
squeezed
sandwich.
From the shit store.
Hmm. Yeah, including some unfortunate celebrity deaths.
Yeah.
You guys already know which ones it's going to be.
Yeah.
Also, some important national news involving a certain Arizona senator. Also,
I'm using international news.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, just the world we live in, folks.
Yep. We've also got some scientific news, and of course, we have got a shit ton of trailers.
Yep.
And entertainment news, including some stuff.
I'm surprised Danrib isn't here with us tonight.
Yeah, he's at SDCC, so he's right in the middle of that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is kind of what happens when you have D23 and SDCC back-to-back.
Yep.
And Evo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like all of the things all at once.
But, so some of these trailers I'm definitely going to be talking about, because some of these are projects that definitely have my interest, including a certain HBO show that's apparently being the follow-up to the showrunners from Game of Thrones. That one's gonna be, oh boy. Well, you'll see what we're talking about when we get to it. But
yeah. It's an interesting concept.
Yeah. Yes, it is, and we'll talk about it when we get there. But
sure will.
First things first. Before all of that, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
Audiobooks. I'm still listening to Fallen Dragon. I'm about I think 80% of the way through now. So yeah, I'm getting through that. Apparently. That book took a turn that I wasn't expecting, so just I'll have to like listen to the rest of that after the show because some weird shit just started happening. But it is Peter F. Hamilton, so I guess I shouldn't really be too surprised because weird shit happens in his stuff all the time.
Oh yeah.
Apart from
like
that,
it's a space like you know you're reading a space opera that has relatively hard science, and then oh my god, all the dead are coming back from hell.
Yeah.
And they just.
Yeah.
What the hell, man? Literally.
Or you're listening to, a hardcore space opera and it turns into a fantasy novel.
Mm hmm. That happens too.
And then he manages to explain how that actually works in a way that's completely believable. So, yeah, he's a talented author. And he likes lots of sex scenes. Just to point that out. Anyways.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. But other than that, Babylon 5, I've been watching my DVD box set and really enjoying that. That first season is slow. There's no real way to say it there, but that first season is kind of slow, but once you get past that, it starts picking up pretty well. The story is good. The writing is good. The acting seems to actually get better during the second season, which is good. So... yeah, I'm enjoying that a lot. And I'm probably going to be playing Pyre a lot this week. So after the show, I plan to go and buy it on the PlayStation Store. So, yeah. Pyre, it's coming out this week. You want it. So, that's been my week. How about you, Pat?
Streaming.
Yeah, he's been doing a shit ton of streaming.
And I hope you're all entertained.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've noticed is that streaming has gotten me into buying games that I probably wouldn't be buying if I wasn't going to play them in a broadcast setting. But I'm having a lot of fun with it. I mean, Overwatch being one of them. I'm just getting Mario Kart 8 tonight.
Yeah.
So, things like that. It's broadening my horizons, and I have friends who stream that I watch, and they play games that I really have no intention of getting into, but it's still really fun just watching them play and shooting the shit with them while they do.
Yeah.
Streaming is going to save the social side of gaming from kind of isolated online play.
Yeah.
So... It's bringing people together in a way that I haven't seen since the arcades.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
So I'll be back on tonight with Final Fantasy XII: The Zodiac Age.
Did you start that yet?
I started it last night. Haven't done too much with it yet, but I'm streaming it off and on, and I'll be doing some more tonight.
Okay.
So.
Awesome. All right, what about you, Chris?
So coming out of Prime Day, the one physical thing I ordered is a collection of Dragon Ball movies that mostly I didn't know existed. I knew one of them did. But the others are Curse of the Blood Rubies, Mystical Adventure, Sleeping Princess in Devil's Castle, and The Path to Power. And it's actually pretty good. None of them are attempting to be canon. They kind of retell parts of the story, like the Curse of the Blood Rubies takes place right at the beginning of the show, where Bulma crashes into Goku, and they meet Oolong and Yamcha and all that, but then are tasked with helping save this village whose king has become corrupted by these blood rubies, and along with that, he's also going after the Dragon Balls because he's got an unending hunger. And so Goku obviously goes and beats him up and saves everybody. Which is it's pretty well done in the way that Dragon Ball is sort of lighthearted, but with some good action and all that. Not like much of the Dragon Ball Z movies where they're just kind of nonsense and weird.
Yeah.
There's like a couple that are pretty good, but most of them are just throwaway as they try to fit in weird shit.
Yeah.
That doesn't need to be there. These other ones, and it's interesting just listening to these, because you can tell different voice actors were not able to come in for certain movies. So Colleen Klinkenbeard, I think it is, who voices Naruto, does Goku for a number of these movies, which was interesting. I think Christopher Sabat is in all of them, voicing...
So they redid it with Funimation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like with all their voice actors,
Funimation.
Yeah. And there's a number of characters that are recast, but mostly I assume just because of schedule. And they're pretty good on average. Path to Power is the weirdest one because it retells the beginning of the show, but in the context of the Red Ribbon Army being like the first thing that is important.
Blood Rubies kind of did that too.
Not really. There wasn't any Red Ribbon Army in that. That was just this weird village.
Retelling the beginning of the series.
This was more of a complete retelling. Like, that was just instead of going to meet Roshi and doing the Dragon Ball stuff, it's a what-if alternate take. This is sort of like, these are things that actually happen in the show for the most part.
Okay.
But just completely changed up. So they tackle Eater's tower first before meeting Roshi, which is weird.
Yeah.
And it's not as long as that whole arc is. But Eater obviously does the thing where he kicks Goku's ass and then's like, I don't want to fight anymore. Then beats up the guy that's running that tower. Then sort of comes back and helps them out later on. And they go after Dragon Balls, or the Red Ribbon Army is, because obviously Commander Red is short and wants to be taller. And he gets overthrown by Commander Black, who's ironically a black man.
No, that's not irony at all. That was 100% intentional.
I know. I know, that's sarcasm mixed with iron. And it's a pretty interesting way they do it. Some of the others are just a little bit weird. The sleeping princess in Devil's Castle is kind of a weird thing. That one, I think, is set more in the middle of the early parts of the show. So, I forget where exactly it's taken place. But the Mystical Adventure is set in an alternate timeline where Master Shen is kind of king of that town where they hold the martial arts tournament. And so he's setting up what is his name? Pai?
Mm-hmm.
Setting him up to kill these different fighters. He nearly kills the Indian kid's father.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Which they conveniently start calling him Native. Describe him as Native. It's like, okay, you're moving away from some of the racist stuff in this show. But yeah, overall,
and there's a lot.
Yeah.
Remember, this is Japan in like the late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Though they do make sure to have Bulma's scene where Goku takes off her panties and she accidentally flashes her crotch to Roshi.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of her underwear.
Oops.
Mm-hmm.
Which is still pretty good as a funny thing. Yeah, it's a pretty good collection of movies. It was like $20. Which
that
is,
ain't bad at all.
Yeah, pretty good for some of that older Dragon Ball stuff.
History, really.
Yeah. Also, I've been playing more Persona 5, jumping back into that. Still early on in that first castle, but I'm basically at the point where it's kind of opened up a bit, at least for the castle. You're kind of free to go and explore the levels and move up. I think I'm on the third floor right now before I had to punch out. And I was glad to see they brought back the sort of network stuff that Golden had, so you could see like what everybody did that day.
Yeah.
Though instead of just a bunch of bubbles of like, here's like 30 people what they did, it actually tells you like percentages. Like 2/3 of the people went in to fight the dungeon, because of course they did. And there's like 1/3 of people that went to do like studying or hang out with people. That's some cool stuff. Look forward to playing more of that. Now I'm at the point where Morgana is telling the MC to go to bed.
To go to fucking, yeah.
Yeah. So I've gotten to that point of the game. also been playing more of the Crash Trilogy.
Of all the things in Persona 5 to become a meme, that had to...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing more of the Crash Trilogy and beat the first game, which was a good feat, because some of those last few levels are really hard. And then they added another really hard level as free DLC.
Yeah,
that, the Stormy Ascent.
Yeah, I think that was cut from the first game.
It was technically in the final release. They just made it inaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was apparently 4 or 5 times longer than the other level that it's based on, and much, much harder, to the point that the guy that designed it couldn't even beat it. So,
whoops.
And they said, well, we're not going to remove this because they don't know if that would affect anything.
Hmm.
Other things, other parts of the game, but they just made it hard to get to. But yeah, I'm looking forward to playing that, because that was the level I talked about wiping out on and having to give me a checkpoint, a new checkpoint, like later in the level.
Yeah.
And now it's 4 times longer. So it's like, okay, fuck me. I also started up Super Hot VR.
Yeah.
Put up a video on the our YouTube channel, which that is a hell of a lot of fun. It's like a Matrix simulator.
Yeah.
You can do just some really cool and crazy shit. So much like Super Hot, when you move, things move. If you don't, it moves like very, very slowly.
Yeah.
But that really is a big thing when it's in VR. It's like, you can't move to do things.
Ooh.
Which also means when I want things to move, I sit there and just shake my hands. It's just like a, all right, I want to see what happens here.
Mm.
There's lots of really cool moments. Like I get double Uzis and guys are coming from left and right. I'm just sitting there looking forward and just spraying bullets without looking to my left and right. It's like, it's just fucking awesome.
Mm.
There's one cool moment where you're on top of a building with glass and you just punch this guy. He falls through the glass. If you move on to the next area, you will see, that's where the double Uzi thing is, you'll see him continue falling down. That's that same area.
Mm.
It's like the next part, and it's really cool to see him fall. It's like, holy crap! They did put out the day one update, which fixed one of the weird bugs in the video, which is when you get to the hacker room, that when you get out of the VR, I spawned outside of the room.
Whoops.
on like the opposite side of the room from where it wanted me to go. So you can see me in the video, like literally moving physically in my room, recentering the whole thing, trying to move up and then trying to just fix that in the weirdest way possible. So I could actually continue, because you have to go to the table across the room, pick up a floppy disk and put it in the machine to continue on. And yeah, that game is a hell of a lot of fun. Like, there's you just know you're doing some cool shit when you're fucking blocking bullets with a gun. You're just holding up the gun that's in your hand to block bullets. Or if you're just, you're focusing on these guys on the left side, not realizing bullets have been shot at you and they hit you right in the neck.
Oof.
Or would hit you in the neck if you were actually getting shot.
Yeah.
And it's like some of that really cool shit. It seems like a really good game, and I'm looking forward to playing more of that. And I've been doing more YouTubing. Let's see, the free game I played this week is Crossout, which came out recently on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. And if you liked Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, that style of vehicle building,
okay,
it's that, but set in like a Mad Max world with Twisted Metal style car combat. No, not as ridiculous. At least not from what I've seen.
Yeah.
It has like the sharing vehicle stuff, and people have made some really crazy shit.
Yeah.
Though you have to have the materials to build it to be able to download it.
Cool.
So I don't have most of it, so it's just pretty stuff to look at.
Yeah.
Somebody made a helicopter. Obviously you can't fly, so it kind of stays in place until you get your boost every like 20 seconds, so it doesn't move. But it's a pretty cool thing that somebody made.
Yeah,
there's like actual like sailboats, pirate ships with like wheels under them, and cannons on top, which is pretty cool. It's not gonna do well anywhere, but it's a cool thing that people made. And yeah, that's a pretty good game. The knock I have on it is it seems to be all about grind. Because you're just kind of replaying the same levels over and over again, hoping for good material and whatnot to drop. Which I don't really find all that fun. There is some like raid stuff in there that's like the PvE type stuff you group up with others, which is kind of neat though. When I tried it in the video, I was way under leveled. They don't really tell you anything about what sort of difficulty there is on that stuff. But I was, my car power rank was maybe 1400. So either 400 or 1400, but the guys I was with had over 4,000 and 5,000 power ranking. So they were like,
they've been there for a while.
Yeah, we won despite me losing all my lives. and basically being two against everybody. But yeah, like it has some really cool effects on the cars when you you blow them apart. So like there there were matches where I ended up surviving but had two wheels. So I could barely turn, but I could still shoot because it's all on the analog stick to shoot, sort of 360. And so it's kind of fun to just pick apart these cars and see how they have to react and do that. As for, I did some VR time stuff, played 100-foot robot golf, which is a fun, silly golf game with commentary by two of the McElroys. I think it's Justin and Griffin. I forget which ones it is, but they make all the pun jokes. There's a dedicated pun button on the story map, which just does golf puns. And it was like a joke about mulligans. When you make a bad shot, you have to mullet again. It's like, okay,
yeah,
that's
bad jokes.
The other game I featured is Wayward Sky, which is from Uber Entertainment and a really good puzzle game. It's sort of, it's kind of isometric, except you're obviously the camera. And you can sort of get up and look around and find some of the secrets they have in there. Which are sort of, there's five collectibles. There's like these capsules you can find, as well as these like just wind chimes. You just like physically put the wind chimes up on this holder. But once you do, it's, you know, one of five. The puzzles themselves are a lot of just general puzzles. Like, hey, here, figure out how to get this robot up to this other part so they can activate this switch that lets you get to this next area, like switch puzzles. Or someone's like, oh, here's a grid of switches. You flip one, it flips the ones northeast, southwest of it. You have to figure out how to get them all on, as well as a bunch of other just general like level switch or other types of puzzles, which is just pretty fun. I think I'm not too far from beating that, so I definitely want to get back in and play some more of that. And they got a game coming out pretty soon with Dino Frontier, which looks pretty cool. What were the sim games that came out in XBLA where you're sort of picking up people, putting hats on them for what jobs, and sort of setting up production lines, essentially? Like, oh, you go get the wood, and then take the, this guy takes the wood to this shop to turn it into this kind of thing, which then gets taken to this other shop so you can make something else out of it. Keflings?
Yeah, the Kingdom for Keflings.
That seems like the VR version of that, but in the Wild West with dinosaurs, which could be pretty cool if they do it well. And the anniversary I celebrated this week is Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, which turned 14 on the 15th.
You've got another one you could do this this week. I don't know if it's this week or anything, but it is this year. The Portal's 10 years old.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just have, I guess I could play it on, I was playing on my Steam Link with a DualShock 4.
Yeah, that'll work.
Which was, well, with Knights of the Old Republic, that's
not so good.
It's a keyboard game. trying to, which, literally, like, the beginning of the video is me trying to figure out how to fight. Because I don't know how the controls are done in that, which ended up being I used the D-pad to switch between the different enemies, hit one of the face buttons to do an attack, then pushing the right part of the touchpad to start the attack. Because I had it just constantly pause whenever somebody needed to do something, which was a good idea.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, the conversation wasn't good because you had to actually click on the sentence for your options.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm using the right stick to move the cursor. It's a tiny cursor. And pressing right trigger on the specific line. It's like, you guys can't just make this D-pad.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that was the point where PC developers were encouraged not to make anything easy, because that was console. Yeah. That was console trash. You can't control menus directly with the arrows or the WASD or whatever.
Nope.
You.
But yeah, it was cool that they have that stuff in there where I download somebody else's control scheme for that to make it work on the DualShock 4, which is really cool. What wasn't cool is it took me like an hour to set this up, because for whatever reason, the DualShock 4 that was synced to it with Bluetooth worked fine on the Steam Link menus, the setup menus. When I go to launch it into big picture mode, it would stop working. It wouldn't work out.
Joy.
And brilliant. I found out, this took me like 30 minutes of just getting mad, trying USB cords and all this, and find out, oh, it's because DS4 Windows is on, and it's interfering with all of this. Like, motherfucker. And turn that off, and it's like, okay, it works now. Because at one point I was thinking, is this thing just fucking broke? Like, and apparently no, it's...
Nope. Just
because of a stupid program auto turns itself on when upon startup.
Yeah.
And now I'm good to go on that. I'm looking forward to trying out more of these non-controller games on a controller.
Yeah.
And, it was cool that on the Steam stuff you can actually mess with the light bar and change the color and all that, which is pretty cool. I know DS4 Windows does that, but obviously I don't need it anymore.
Yeah,
I just found it fun that that is into Steam now. It's like, hey, here, set these specific things. Though I did fuck up one thing. I apparently turned on gyro controls for this cursor at some point before I was actually using it. So then immediately it was like, okay, this is a puzzle. I got to figure out how to have the gyro not affect any part of the menu so I can go figure out where to turn this off. It's like, oh, don't turn on the gyros.
Yeah.
It's way too sensitive. But yeah, it's your turn, Brandon.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm just about finished with Tales of Berseria. It happened.
I was wondering when you'd get to that point.
It happened. And you know what I'm talking about when I say it. It's that point in every Tales game when the curtain is thrown back and suddenly everything you know is a lie. But holy shit, this one actually tops pretty much all the ones that came before it. And just the sheer what the fuckery. But, yeah, so far the game's it's still really good, and pretty sure I'm just about at the end of it. Unlike Tales of Zestiria, I don't think there's any, like, post-game DLC.
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, so...
probably just typical Tales DLC bullshit.
Mm-hmm. And so...
consumable items.
Yeah, stuff like that. So now that... you know, once that'll be done, I will probably be taking that with me to GameStop, and I will be getting Final Fantasy XIV Complete Edition for my PS4.
Yes.
Which went up in price somehow. No, not sure why that happened.
I think they threw Stormblood in with it, and that was what...
Yeah, it is. It's like $59.99 now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the complete edition 2017.
Oh, yep. Okay, so I'm not mad about that then. If it's actually complete and includes everything, then that's
well, it's literally everything, including the most recent expansions. So
that makes sense then.
That's like literally like 2.5 games for the price of one.
I would say it's 3 games at this point.
Mm. Yeah.
It's also probably like how much space is that eating up on your PS4, Pat?
I'm trying not to think about that right now.
I don't think it's that big. I'd say it's like 40, 50 gigs.
Hmm.
Because when they do a patch, they ride over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not Doom. It's 73 gigs on my PS4 now.
Yeah.
The only game that beats it is Elder Scrolls Online, which is 82, I think.
Yeah.
It's like, I can at least see that. I don't know what the fuck Doom is doing.
Yeah. So basically, the way I'm going to do it is I'm going to... My primary goal in that game is to become a red mage. That's my...
You can become every class.
Quickly.
Huh?
You can become every class.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, you have to get... Don't you have to get to, like, level 50 before you can...
Yeah, because red mage starts at level 50.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think there's, like, a specific quest line that you have to do before you can go through it, so...
That's called Heaven's Ward.
All of it.
Yeah. But basically, I just freaking love what they did with the Red Mage for this game. You know, they sort of got down the whole sort of Jack of all trades thing that the original Red Mage was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And, Red Mage's primary weapon is literally a rapier that doubles as a magic staff.
Mm.
That's just badass.
Yeah.
And basically, so until that point, my plan is basically to be a dragoon.
I can teach you dragoon very well.
Yeah.
I happen to be a level 70 dragoon right now.
Yeah.
Nice.
But anyway, so that's not until I get the game and get it, you know, installed and everything. And got to get my finances in order, which fortunately, that's not going to be that big of a problem right now. But anyway, so other than all that, I've been reading, as usual. Really nothing exceptional to bring up there. Other than the fact that I did start reading Stephen Brust's Vlad Taldos books, which, for those of you who don't know, that's... Stephen Brust was he's still very much around and still writing, but his whole sort of Vlad Taldos books take place in sort of a low fantasy standing called Dragaera, which is sort of like a fantasy version of like the, say, like 1600s, like, you know, Venice and France. Especially France. Sort of like, you know, the whole swashbuckler, cloak and dagger type thing.
Okay.
You know, Three Musketeers, like that. Think that era. Mm-hmm. And it's basically about this dude named Vlad Taldos who works as an assassin for one of the major families in the world of Dragaera. Everybody belongs to a specific noble house, all of whom are in many ways distinct enough to be their own ethnicities in many ways. Hmm. The important thing you got to remember is that humans in Dragaera are actually a minority. Most of the people on Dragaera are Dragaerians, and they are a couple heads taller than humans and have psychic powers.
Okay.
Good stuff. It's actually really funny. Vlad Taldos is a shitlord of the highest caliber. but yeah, so it's...
I'm thinking of a Magic the Gathering setting that's kind of like what you're describing, but...
Well, there's also Dungeons & Dragons setting, too, and also Pathfinder. Basically, every fucking RPG under the sun has one like that.
Yeah.
Just from the way you're describing it, I'm getting Ravnica vibes.
Hmm. Yep. I got a used bass guitar for $9.99. I meant $99. Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, that's still pretty good.
Still good, yeah.
Yeah. A friend of mine works at a pawn shop. He was getting rid of his old bass guitar, and I wanted one, and he sold it to me for $99. So,
fuck yeah,
it was a steal.
Yeah, not bad.
Now I just got to learn how to play.
That's a step I've been meaning to take.
Yeah.
I say I got to learn how to play. Funny thing about the bass is, if you know how to play guitar, you're pretty much already halfway there.
Yeah.
Hey, you might just be able to get Rocksmith.
Yeah.
Yep.
Try that out.
Yeah.
That one does work with
the current gen.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's all for me. Anybody got anything else they want to add before we go on to the show?
Yeah, I got one thing.
What?
Chris was talking about Dragon Ball earlier, and I wanted to bring up Dragon Ball Abridged on YouTube.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen this, but it's...
Yes, I have.
I've encountered it in my travels.
Yeah, it's basically Dragon Ball, but with all of the powering up and screaming cut out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
and replaced with, well, funny.
Yeah. It's
it brings
good.
The funny.
It's really, really good. So check that out if you haven't already. It's good.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I picked up something. I took advantage of a deal that Best Buy has got right now in their Black Friday and July sale, which I got they had buy one, get one half off for 3DS games.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked up Dragon Quest 7 and 8.
Ooh. Nice.
Though I got 8 right now. 7 is not going to be available for pickup till Tuesday or Wednesday.
Mm.
I'll still lock it in, though. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
It was nice to say, hey, let's just get all of the Dragon Quest.
Yep.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well,
that is the thing you can do now.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Alright, so I guess now it's time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And I would like to ask my colleagues here of an idea. What would you think of a theme park, like a big theme park, that through the use of dioramas, exhibits, and displays, simulated and recreated the entirety of Dante's The Divine Comedy?
Add mind-expanding drugs and you got a deal.
Yeah. Actually, specifically, just shrink it down to Dante's Inferno. Okay. Like, you could start, like, say there's, like, an elevator, and you start, like, in the woods, and then you go up the mountain to Limbo, and then you can just descend down through the circles, all the way down to the bottom.
I'm down.
It's like, yeah, that's a great idea, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, those don't exist. Mm. However, that being said, over in Asia, they've got some, they got something kind of like that, although it's not based on Christian mythology, but it's still very much a trip through hell.
Okay.
I bring you, all the way from Thailand, the Wong San Suk Hell Garden.
Okay.
I gotta see this.
Give me a minute.
Yeah.
What the actual crucified fuck?
I'll give you a minute.
I got nothing.
Yeah, you know, we don't get to say, oh, Japan anymore after this because... No.
Now it's what the fuck, Thailand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, this isn't the only one of its kind, but it's the one I'm focusing on and specifically for, well, I'll tell you. All right, so what we're talking about is Wong San Suk Hell Garden. It's a religious facility slash attraction that is in the village of San Suk, which is a little over 100 kilometers from where Bangkok is located. It's run by a local Buddhist monastery, and basically they basically request donations from people. There is actually no charge to go into this thing, but they do, you know, request that you give a donation before you walk in. And basically what it is it is visual representations of the various punishments one receives in Buddhist hell, or Naraka, as it's called. And it's got a lot of stuff from, like, Chinese myth, and basically it shows, like, the specific punishments for specific sins. For example, if you were a glutton in life, you would turn into what they call the hungry ghost, which is the big giant skeletal figure that you see second picture down.
Yeah.
Hungry ghosts are actually like a thing that have been part of Chinese mythology for millennia. You'll also have things like if you cheated or stole or in your life you have to like climb the spiky tree while demons gorge you with spears. Depending on certain types of sins, you'll be transformed into like a human chicken or a human cow or a human pig and basically butchered by demons until your good karma is enough that you can be reincarnated again. That's where all the animal-headed characters are from. That's basically what they are. There's also a statue of the Fa Yam, who is the Death King, who basically, whenever a recently deceased souls comes to him, he is then judges them and puts them to where they are to be punished until their karma is, you know, significantly enough that they can leave. All of these basically have signs that come with sufficient English. For example, for those who are guilty of arson, there is a sign that says, "Ones who are employed to put fire on the other's properties are punished in the hell. They are named as the spirits of the snakes."
Okay, then.
Oh, and in case for those who are wondering, the very first image you see is of a woman getting her pelvis crushed by two demons using, what do you call those things? Lathes, I guess? For those who are wondering, she had an abortion. She got divorced. I can't remember which one. Chinese Buddhism tends to be very socially conservative, for those who don't know. It's not very kind to women, see. There's some other weird punishments. Like for gluttons, you basically lose your head and your torso becomes your face. It makes sense when you see it. If you apparently slept around, if you're a woman who slept around, a demon takes a big stone spike and stabs you in the vagina repeatedly for all eternity.
What it lacks in creativity.
It more than makes up for in just sheer what the fuckery. Yeah. Now, here's the thing I wanted to point out. As I said earlier, this is not the only type of garden in its type. There's a similar type of attraction called the... let's see, if I'm trying to remember what it's called. It's actually down here. It's called the Ha Par Vila in Singapore. It actually has its hell attraction is its biggest, but it's also got a bunch of dioramas of like Chinese mythology and stuff. You know, the Monkey King makes an appearance, that type of thing. Yeah. But that one is actually more elaborate and more well kept. The reason I'm using this one is because, well, look at it. I mean, it looks like some crazy dude built this in his backyard.
Yeah.
Seriously, look. It's like
It doesn't look safe.
Yeah, it's like it's overgrown and it's like out in the middle of a like a park somewhere and it's you know, it looks like it's needed a new coat, hasn't had a new coat of paint in a couple years.
Yeah.
A couple too many. Yeah.
Yeah. Thoughts?
What the fuck, Thailand? that's all I can say.
America does not have a monopoly on religious scare tactics, clearly.
Nope.
No. No, they do not. So that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Sweet dreams, everybody.
That's the thing you know now.
Yeah. So, let's...
Yeah, so, with that out of the way, it's now time for the show proper. First, we have got our asshole of the week. And wouldn't you know it, it's Ann Coulter.
I wonder why. I mean...
I'm actually surprised she doesn't pile up more of these.
To be honest, I think Ann Coulter is kind of at this point desperate to remain relevant now.
Yeah.
Like, she really had, there was a time back in the day when she was just fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, she was like, she was Milo before Milo.
Yeah.
But, ever since then, she's basically been superseded by much worse people.
Yeah.
Which does not necessarily say that Ann Coulter isn't still a cunt, because she is still very much a raging, mean, vengeful cunt. And this time her country involved a freak out she had at a Delta flight.
So basically she bought in an exit row seat, aisle seat, went to get on her flight and found out, I've been moved to the window seat. This is what she's freaking out about. Same row, moved from aisle to window seat. I saw an article where she claimed she had spent about $10,000 worth of her time picking out the right seats and double-checking that it hadn't been changed and all that. It's like, if you want to waste $10,000 of your time, you should buy first class.
Yeah.
That's what that's there for. Because they're not going to fuck with you in first class because you're paying too much money.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, she's being incredibly cheap, going for the exit rows even then.
Mm-hmm. Am I a terrible person for thinking, why couldn't she have done this like 3 or 4 months ago?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. And she even went as far as to take a picture of the woman that was in her original seat. Like, she has anything to do with this.
The sense of entitlement from these people is just ridiculous.
She just went on a tirade on Twitter. Just when you think it's safe to fly them again, the worst airline in America is still at Delta. Does your union hate you at Delta? Not really worth spending all that money on planes when Delta gate staff give your seat away. And there's a picture of her her window seat. Her quote, why are you taking me out of the extra room seat I specifically booked, Delta? Flight attendant? I don't know. Okay, because she doesn't decide seating or anything like that.
No.
Delta didn't give my extra room seat to an air marshal or a tall person. So here's the woman given my pre-booked seat. And picture of the people there. They look like, what the fuck is she doing? Which, it's amazing that nobody on the flight pulled out their phone to video capture all this stuff.
Probably because they didn't know who she was.
Yeah. But I also assume that she... I don't know. I don't know what she was doing there, but she also continues, hey, Delta, you mind telling me why it was an quote-unquote emergency to move someone else into the seat I had carefully chosen in advance and booked? Also, Delta, your Wi-Fi doesn't work. Probably to prevent passengers from tweeting from the plane about how they're being treated. No, it's because Wi-Fi doesn't work all the time.
Exactly.
JetBlue has free Wi-Fi and doesn't wantonly remove passengers from their assigned seats booked in advance for a reason. Delta sucks. And
fly JetBlue.
Yeah.
All I can say is, join the club, lady.
Yeah. It's like everybody has a miserable time with flights.
Yeah.
We'll give her one thing, though.
Delta does suck, so
she's
right there.
Still administering beatdowns.
No, but they still suck.
Mm-hmm.
And Delta responded, we're sorry you did not receive the preferred seat you paid for, and we'll refund your $30. Additionally, your insults about our other customers and employees are unacceptable and unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just love, you're going to get your $30 back. Don't worry.
God damn it.
That just makes the whole story even more pathetic.
Yeah, for $30.
Now seriously? There's like some grand conspiracy people are making that, oh, the people at the front desk are liberals and figured out who she was and changed her seat.
Hmm.
It's like, there's no,
yeah, right.
I don't think there's any room to do that.
Nope.
That would be, that'd be ridiculous.
Like Delta overbooks by their policy.
Yeah.
That's just what they
did. Almost all they changed it as a result of that whole incident.
Mm-hmm. God damn it. Well,
on the upside, since this is our asshole of the week, maybe we've hit the threshold of shittery and things are looking up. I don't know.
We've hit like...
They're still next week.
Yeah. It's like this week was pretty light on pure assholes. And even the hero of the week was... kind of a last minute thing.
Yeah.
I was like, is there anything here that's positive? Like, it's like, oh, here's this thing.
And then buckle up.
Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, so this week our hero is none other than Kendrick Lamar, who not only signed some merchandise for a disabled fan, but once he found out that she had been trying to raise money for those, okay. So for those who don't know, this particular fan is wheelchair bound, and
she's been trying to get a van that specifically accommodates that.
Yeah, because I don't know how many of you folks have ever had disabled family members who are wheelchair bound, but this is the type of wheelchair that requires like a lift and. Help you get into the vehicle and everything. It's one of those. So Kendrick Lamar, he not only decided to sign some personalized merch for her, he also is going to cover the cost of the van she needs.
And he sort of announced that to her by specifically how he signed this jacket for her.
Mm-hmm.
Which says, thank you for always supporting me. And you can tell he's not great with writing. He uses the wrong your every single time, almost.
Mm-hmm.
You're inspiration for me. You are strong and positive. You are kind and beautiful. For all the years of inspiring me, the least I can do is make sure you're comfortable driving the city. A gift from me to you. You're always appreciated, Lamar.
Good dude.
Yep. Good dude. He needs to learn how to write properly, but still a good guy.
Yeah.
Hey, he makes enough money, he doesn't have to care.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it would help him with his rapping. I'll just point that out.
That's true.
That would be true. Mm. But as far as, need money, I mean, look at our own president.
And he's apparently been sort of talked to her a lot over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how he got to the point.
He knows her.
Decided to buy the van for her.
Mm, awesome.
All right. All right. Well, it's now time for the show proper. And we got our trio of celebrity deaths because I'm pretty sure that's like a law of the universe.
Yeah, celebrity deaths. 3 in 1 week is a little much, but okay.
Two of these were in the same day.
Mm. Yeah, so. First and foremost, legendary filmmaker George Romero sadly passed away. He, of course, is famous for basically creating the modern zombie genre as we know it.
Yeah.
Pretty much single-handedly. I mean, he really did not have a lot to go on. The very first Night of the Living Dead, of course, was, for a lot of people who don't know, the original Night of the Living Dead was an indie movie. And was made on a very low budget, and it also made a ton of money, but unfortunately George didn't see a lot of that money for years.
Yeah,
because he kind of got screwed with the distribution rights. Of course, he also then followed it up with the Let's see, there was it Dawn of the Dead? I think it was. Which is actually far superior to the original, far as I'm concerned.
Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead, and Survival of the Dead.
Yeah, lots of dead.
Yeah.
Just dead everywhere. Of course, so he didn't just make dead movies. He also made some other ones, including a... God, I can't remember what it's called, but it's the movie about the, I guess, the Renaissance troupe who basically sort of lives their whole lives like they're knights or something.
Okay.
I can't remember what it's called. Screw it. I got to look this up. The reason I'm saying that is because both Stephen and Tabitha King make cameos in that movie. Yeah, so let's see. It's Oh, and he also made a Creepshow 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah.
Which is Knight Riders. That's what it was called. 1981. Okay. It's basically it's about a Renaissance fair group. It's absolutely insane movie if you ever get a chance to see it.
I could find a copy.
Yeah. So yeah, unfortunately, I mean, for the record, George was an old man. So
yeah,
he had lung cancer.
Yeah, he was 77.
Fuck cancer.
He died in Ontario, Toronto, to be exact. Yeah.
Well, good place to go with honey, I suppose.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Edgar Wright made this rather poignant tribute here. That we got linked.
He basically says, without George, at the very least, my career would have started very differently. My future in film really started when I became firm friends with Simon Pegg while we were making Spaced. We realized that we were both obsessed with Dawn of the Dead and George's work.
Yeah. And out of that, eventually became Shaun of the Dead. Yeah. Which is...
They talk about how they made a deal to get a screening out to George. Was on vacation. Universal contacted George and screened the movie for him while he was on vacation in Florida. I remember being bemused that he watched the movie with the studio security guy in the theater, as if George himself would pirate the movie. Even if he did, he would be more than due some profits from our cinematic Valentine to him. Later that night, George called us in London. I remember standing in my flat in Islington when I got the call from him, and he couldn't have been warmer and kinder about the movie. I remember him saying that it was quote, in an absolute blast, that indeed became the sole poster quote for the movie in the United States.
Well, that's really all it needed.
I frequently think back to this moment of standing in my house as the moment my life truly changed and the world got smaller. Which they eventually, Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright, got invited to be zombies in Land of the Dead. I got pictures of that here. And talking about how they had sent George a 4A electric name tag as a token of the poster quote stuff.
Yeah.
And he was wearing it while he greeted them. So he was very much a guy that knew how to treat his friends.
Yeah.
And I think they were even on the poster for Land of the Dead. Sort of near the front. You can see both of their zombie faces on there. And yeah, they talk about the emails when they found out he was getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He replied, so nice to hear from you. You are the first person of note to have responded to the announcement of my star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. If I had been given a date for the, what he calls, quote, unquote, ceremony, I would certainly have passed it on to all who might have been amused. As of now, there's no definite date. Once a date is determined, I will alert you and my children, who at this point seem to be the only amused parties. I fully appreciate that someday in the future one of my kids might be walking along Zambezi Street in L.A. And wonder why his or her father has his name embedded beneath the dog shit. Thousands of people stepping over that same dog shit. If they can decipher the time-crusted lettering, we'll ask, who the fuck is George Romero? Only you and my children will know.
Yeah. I constantly talk about Shaun of the Dead because, to me, it's probably the most realistic zombie movie of them all.
It's also just hysterical.
It was their sort of spoof on what if British people had to deal with zombies.
And what it does is, they deal with it pretty well, actually.
Yeah.
Like, for all the shit that happens to Sean and his friends, in reality, everything kind of goes back to normal after a couple months.
Yeah.
Like, they just readjust. They just sort of deal with the zombie thing and even come up with a new politically correct term for them. Immobile deceased. Now we got our second celebrity death of the week, which was actor Martin Landau. Landau was he originally made his premiere in North by Northwest. That's of course the classic Hitchcock movie. He was also in Mission Impossible.
Classic old TV shows that readapted into movies and whatnot now.
Yeah, and he also played Bela Lugosi in the Ed Wood movie. And was unbelievably good, too, because, holy crap, you would not know that was Martin Landau unless somebody told you. He was that good.
It says here he turned down Star Trek.
Yep.
Oops.
He says, I turned down Star Trek. It would have been torturous. He said during a 2011 edition of the PBS documentary series Pioneers of Television, I would have probably died playing that role. I mean, even the thought of it now upsets me. It was the antithesis of why I became an actor. I mean, to play a character that Lenny, as in Leonard Nimoy, was better suited for, frankly, a guy who speaks in a monotone, who never gets excited, never has any guilt, never has any fear, or was affected on a visceral level. Who wants to do that?
Okay.
Yeah. Which he became a big Tim Burton actor. Was in Sleepy Hollow and the Frank and Weenie sort of remake.
Yeah. And Ed Wood, like I said. In fact, he won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for his Bela Lugosi role.
Rounders, The X-Files movie, Majestic, a bunch of stuff that's kind of out of my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Though he's also been acting since the 60s, so.
Oh, yeah.
Out of most of our wheelhouses.
Yeah.
So. But probably the big celebrity death of the week was, of course, mostly because of how out of nowhere and how it happened, was Chester Bennington of Linkin Park. He apparently death by hanging. He committed suicide at the age of 41. All of a sudden, all those old songs suddenly make sense, don't they?
Yeah.
Also, the dude had some issues. He was pretty...
Lots of drug and alcohol issues.
Drug and alcohol issues, a lot of it stemming from the rather awful abuse he suffered as a child. He was both physically and sexually abused by his family. It was
from 8 to 13, it said.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a long time. There's some quotes from him talking about crawling, which makes a lot of sense in the context of the drug and alcohol abuse stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Bennington sings, "There's something inside me that pulls beneath the surface, consuming, confusing. This lack of self-control I fear is never ending." The song, he later said, was, quote, about feeling like I had no control over myself in terms of drug and alcohol. That feeling, he added, being able to write about it, sing about it, that song, those words sold millions of records. I won a Grammy. I made a lot of money.
And yet, weirdly enough, that song also sort of became the butt of so many jokes, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the most prolific, or the band is the most prolific anime music video soundtrack on the internet.
Yep. So, Pat, you wanted to say something?
Yeah. As a depression patient with a history of suicidal impulses myself, it's been interesting, unsettling, encouraging, all these different things, just watching how people reacted to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's well-meaning when people say, hey, if something's that wrong, I'm there, talk to me. The reality of it is, though, if somebody is at that point, like, there were times in my life I was at that point, the last thing I was ever going to do was say anything. Or, I was having an interesting discussion with my roommate on this subject last night, and one of the things is, like, one of the things we talked about, like, if, say, somebody who's suicidal did come to you, what could you realistically do for them? Like, it makes a couple of assumptions, and again, I still think it's well-meaning, but from the perspective of somebody who's in that mindset, it feels like it makes the assumption that talking solves everything, or that or anything that might be discussed would be coming from the what feels like a biased position in the moment that life is inherently good. And that's not on the table when you're in that mindset. I know it too well. There have been times that I've been open, like right now, about just the fact that when you're genuinely at risk for something like that, it's not something that constantly overwhelms you. It's just a lingering thought in the back of your head that at any given moment could spring forth and just become dominant. And I'm very open to talking about that sort of thing when I'm just generally depressed or in the context of a situation like this where it is a topic on the table. At times that I've been actually close to doing something like that, it is the furthest thing from any discussion that I'm in. And so I think it would be better to I don't really know what you could do for somebody in that situation, having been on both sides of that. I think it's important to sort of detect these things ahead of time. I'm not even sure exactly what I'm trying to say, but somebody who is that close to committing suicide is never going to talk to you about it. And you got to get to them before that.
Yeah.
And I don't like it's something that still happens so often now because there is no book on how to handle it.
No.
But once you're at that point, you're not going to reach out. And
It's hard beforehand. It's hard beforehand because they haven't reached the point where they feel it's something that's imminent. So you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
And the thing that came up was like, okay, say someone who is in that mindset did open up, did come to somebody about wanting help. What would they do for them? Or even what could they do for them? It's hard to think about. It's hard to talk about, but that's it's something that I think everybody has to kind of be in on the discussion on throughout society.
Yeah.
Because awareness isn't enough. Having an open door isn't enough.
Let me put it this way. The thing about people with depression that you got to understand, and because I've had my thing with depression too, and the thing you got to people without it have to understand is one of the worst things that you can tell a person with depression is, I know how you feel.
No,
you don't.
Doesn't work.
Because see, here's the thing. Depression isn't just feeling sad, because what's going on in your head is crazy chemical bullshit. Mm-hmm. It ain't just... Yeah.
It's not rational thought. It's your brain is literally going haywire at this point.
But at the same time, heaven help you if that chemical bullshit going on can speak the truth to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if, you know, depression will lie to you. It'll lie to you constantly. It's something, even with medication, you just have to learn to tune it out and, like, recognize when something is genuinely wrong and when it's just your brain not behaving itself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over the years, I've had depression for at least 2 decades of my life, if not more. You develop a sense of that. But if you have a depressive episode, I'm sorry, I'm eating a power bar right now.
Go ahead.
If you're having a depressive episode and there are real-world circumstances that it can level against you, that is one of the worst feelings in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very least, it sounds like that was kind of what came to bear here. But in order to fix a situation like that, it takes a lot more than just than open ears and a shoulder to cry on. It takes very real, you know, material support sometimes.
Yeah.
And that is something I think a lot of people don't get about depression.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so yeah, that was our trio of celebrity deaths, and unfortunately it doesn't get much better, because next up we've got Arizona Senator John McCain, who this week was just out of the blue diagnosed with a very aggressive form of brain cancer.
He was having cancer surgery. Picked the wrong fight here.
Yeah, he was having surgery this week for a blood clot, and they figured out, oh, he's got this other thing.
Yeah, because those of you who don't know, he from what I heard, didn't he like collapse or something?
Well, he had to have a blood clot removed from above his left eye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess
Which in and of itself is kind of a red flag.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want a blood clot anywhere near your brain.
Yeah. But so the man's, I think, 80 years old now, right?
Something like that.
This is his second fight with cancer.
Yeah, he's had cancer before. But the difference is that he's older, his immune system isn't as strong, and it's the brain.
Yeah.
That puts a very different spin on what happened during the Comey trial.
Yes, it does, because it suddenly makes you realize that, no, he may not have really understood what was happening.
Yeah.
Because we all saw that.
Yeah.
And we all basically
there was something
said,
not right there.
And everybody could tell.
Yeah.
And he, of course, joked and said, no, I was just tired because I'd been staying up all night watching baseball. But
And as far as he knew, that might have been the case.
Yeah.
But, wow. It's a shame that he didn't get checked out right then.
Yeah.
But he, so sort of what here's, we don't really know how much longer he's got. My suggestion would be that he go ahead and resign immediately, spend the last couple months he's got with his loved ones, and basically just sort of start telling it all, I guess.
Yeah. You probably won't have much of an opportunity to do so soon, so may as well make the most of what he has.
I mean, the man's been a congressman for how many years now?
Yeah, like, they don't come much tougher than McCain, though.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, the dude
like, way he's talking, it sounds like he's going to go through with the treatment and has every intention to beat it.
Yeah. Mm. No, I mean, let's remember this guy did survive, like, what was it, like a year in a Viet Cong prison camp?
That was five.
5 years in a Viet Cong.
Yeah, 5 years. So, yeah, the best of luck to Senator McCain.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says here he's served in the Senate for 30 years.
Yeah. That's so he's got a lot of dirt he could just straight up.
Oh, man.
He could hold a press conference on his deathbed and basically pretty much take all of Washington down into hell with him.
Yeah.
It's not like they're already doing it with all the trouble they're having with the health care bill.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we found out, you know, Sean Spicer resigned today.
I'm actually surprised that he was able to stand that job as long as he did.
Yeah. We also found out that Mueller is now expanding the investigation into his businesses. We now know that apparently even though he doesn't want to, it's more than likely we're going to finally hear about his tax returns within the coming weeks. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that should be interesting.
We also know that it's already been announced that he's looking into the presidential pardoning powers. And whether or not he can pardon himself.
Which means he's scared shitless.
Yeah.
No, the president cannot pardon himself.
Yeah. Just because Nixon would have done it if he could. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, just so you know, pardon doesn't protect you from, you know, state.
Yeah, state legislation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, yeah. Looks like sooner than later, this long national nightmare will finally be over. Hmm. But keep in mind, it took a year and a half to take down Nixon, so.
Yeah, we still got some time.
Trump's trying to do a speed run.
Yeah.
But yeah, Nixon was smart though.
Mm.
He was an asshole, but he was a genius.
Yeah.
Mm. Trump's just an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways.
But he's also easily manipulable, which is what makes him doubly dangerous.
Yeah.
Because, you know, an authoritarian asshole is bad enough, but an incompetent authoritarian asshole is just a 20-sided die fucking of potential dangerous. Calamity.
Yeah. And there is the talk of, well, if you get rid of Trump, you've still got to deal with Pence. I have every confidence that Pence would be a terrible president. But at the same time, I also have confidence that he would probably not make an active effort to get us all killed.
Hopefully.
Yeah, it's not much of an upgrade. But it is an upgrade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is a competent politician who can be dealt with. You can't say that about Trump.
No.
Mike Pence, yeah. But that's also kind of what makes him scary, because Mike Pence is also kind of a sociopath.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But I think it was Keith Olbermann who said it best. As bad as it sounds, we can handle another 4 years of George W. Bush if we have to.
Yeah.
Which is basically who Mike Pence was.
No, I think that's giving Pence too much credit.
Yeah.
No, at this point, if for whatever possibly could happen to force the situation, if we get rid of Trump, I would welcome Bush back with open arms before I would actually want Pence to be the successor.
And that's only saying that Pence doesn't end up going down with him, because... Yeah,
which would be glorious.
He's as intertwined in all of this as anyone.
Yeah.
You'll notice how fast he just dropped Trump like a hot potato a couple weeks ago when...
Yeah, he's already setting up doing his work setting up the...
He's just noping his way out of there.
Yeah. He's basically getting all the stuff set for President Pence. That's what he's doing, because he knows it's coming, and he's trying to get his...
go down with the ship.
No.
No.
But anyway, speaking of politics and dumbasses, current Prime Minister of Australia...
Richard Turnbull.
Seriously, that guy is just the giant asshole. He really is. He's basically like the one dude keeping same-sex marriage from coming into Australia, because he won't allow it to come to a vote.
Mm.
You know. But anyway, basically, he appears to think that Australia's laws somehow supersede natural law.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, Chris, was this you?
No.
Okay.
No, this was me.
Okay, go ahead and explain this, because...
Australia wants to adopt surveillance laws, kind of like what the UK has. They're basing their laws on what's affectionately being called the Snoopers Charter over mm-hmm. at in the UK. It's actually called the Investigatory Powers Act, which will allow the government to basically spy on people and force ISPs to keep bigger logs and all that stuff to, stifle dissent, basically.
Yeah. So, thanks, Theresa May.
Yeah, thanks for that. So a reporter asked the obvious question, and I'm not very good at reading aloud, so I'd like you to just read this quote here. Doing it in an Australian accent is totally optional, but yeah.
Okay, let's see. Asked by reporters how legislation would prevent users simply moving to encryption software not controlled by tech companies, proxies, which, by the way, Tor is a thing.
Yeah.
The Onion router is totally a thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I can't do an Australian accent.
No, yeah, don't.
The laws of Australia prevail in Australia. I can assure you of that. The laws of mathematics are very commendable, but the only laws that apply in Australia is the law of Australia. What?
I want to go to one of this guy's rallies with a sign that says, repeal gravity.
Down with calculus.
Just wow. Is all I could say when I read that. It was like, what in the actual fuck?
Algebra equals communism.
Oh my god.
No, repeal gravity, it's holding us down.
I'm sure that is going to happen at some point. Yeah. This is who we have running the world right now, folks.
Yeah, a bunch of old people who don't understand
anything.
Yeah.
Apparently. Yeah.
Except maybe for Justin Trudeau, who is much hipper and apparently
not quite
does.
As old.
Not quite as old.
We still have what's left of the EU, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. There is hope.
Yeah. Anyway.
Just, wow.
Yep. Just thought I'd throw that out there because, in Australia, if you need to balance your books, go to Australia, because apparently Australian law overrides math. So, okay.
Awesome. All right, well, now we got our entertainment stuff. Everybody ready? Here we go. So, first and foremost, the Archie Comics version of the Sonic the Hedgehog comics, which has gone on for hundreds of issues.
Something
is,
like 27 years or so? Well, not 20.
Like yeah. 25.
26.
Yeah. Yeah. It's finally coming to an end, but it's going to be, as they're winding down, it's going to be taken over by IDW, which is pretty cool because IDW's already got some pretty awesome comic tie-in properties already.
If this ends up being a Sonic Boom property, I am going to be very upset.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. They, for one thing, there's already a Sonic Boom comic. And for other thing, they're actually getting a hold of a lot of the older creators to come back on the new series. So, guys like, Jay Axer and such are going to be making a return eventually.
Yeah.
And we're not sure if they're just going to keep continuing the old storyline or if they'll reboot it or do something new.
It sounds like they're bringing it to an end on the Archie side, so...
Yeah.
Start something new.
I if they're smart, they'll keep a lot of the old cast with it because, Sally and Bunny Rabbit and Antoine and all those people have, for a lot of Sonic fans over here, are just as big a deal as the canon characters are. I mean, the whole sort of story arcs of the original Archie comics they get pretty damn elaborate, dude.
Yeah.
They really do. Like, for example, they have the whole storyline where they reveal why does it seem that Robotnik is and Snively are the only humans on Mobius? Turns out there's a reason. Or the civil war that started up after the revolution and, you know, Robotnik was destroyed between, you know, Sally Acorn's father, the king, and Tails' father, Maximilian. Between whether they were going to have a monarchy or a republic. I'm not making any of this shit up.
No.
Also, for those of you who just want to, if you're a big fan like I am of the Saturday AM Sonic cartoon, I have it on DVD, box set.
Woo-hoo!
Nice.
If you ever wanted to know what season 3 was going to look like, just go on Google, put in Sat AM Sonic season, and then replace the S, the second S in season with a 3, and you will go to a really awesome webcomic that is basically the adaptation of season 3 in webcomic form. It's awesome. But, yeah. So, first of all, good kudos to Archie for keeping that shit going as long as they did.
Yeah, and kudos to IDW for
picking it up. Yeah. So they can join some other great properties like Transformers. My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. Yes, they do that one too.
Yeah.
Anyway, so next up, oh God, this one. This one just says it all, doesn't it? So, in Washington, D.C., if you go around in various office buildings, it's probably not unheard of to have run into one of their security robots. As cool as that sounds, it's basically just a giant metal dildo that walks around and takes pictures.
Yeah, it just kind of rolls around. And
yeah, it's sort of like what R2-D2 would look like if he was ribbed for your pleasure. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, they kind of have these in Watch Dogs 2.
Yeah.
Which you can reprogram to kill people.
Yeah. They just kind of wander around, and apparently this one was, like, looking, and remember, this is Washington, D.C. we're talking about, so apparently this one, for the record, hadn't even been active for that long. he had only been recently activated, and apparently he looked around while it was in, and he's like, fuck this.
I can't take it anymore.
And so he literally drowned itself in a shallow fountain overnight.
Yeah, robots don't do stairs very well.
No.
Point that out.
It, well, this was on wheels, so.
Yeah.
Or a track or something, but yeah. It just, you know, everybody's immediately thinking, Rick and Morty, what is my purpose? You give us butter. Oh my God. Yeah, welcome to the club, pal.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of good just pictures of this thing from various people. Like somebody here says, it's okay, security robot. It's a stressful job. We've all been there. Have you thought about getting a lifeguard robot to keep the security robots from drowning?
A little late now.
Yeah.
There's a Game of Thrones reference, Arya Stark. When people ask you what happened here, tell them the North remembers. Tell them winter came for your security robot.
Of course. But yeah.
No, oh, Lord.
Poor Marvin. Sometimes life as a security robot is just too tough. Our DC office building got a security robot. It drowned itself. We were promised flying cars. Instead, we got suicidal robots.
Well, if this is how the robots are going to, you know, react, we probably don't really need to worry about an apocalypse at any time soon. So, just keep that in mind.
Yeah. All right. Well, next up, we got a story from the Bank of England. So, everybody knows that over in England, you know, the pound, they their pound notes, they tend to change the images and the portraits on the pound notes every few years. Everyone from, you know, the Queen to Charles Darwin have been on there. And now they're putting on the 10-pound note Jane Austen with the rather, I don't want to necessarily say ironic as unfortunate, It's from Pride and Prejudice. Basically, the quote is, I declare, after all, there is no enjoyment like reading. The reason this is ironic is that it's from Miss Bingley. if you've read Pride and Prejudice, you'll understand why that's kind of a... Yeah.
As characters sarcastically saying they like reading.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oops.
Oopsie!
Well, she did write it, so...
She did.
That's a thing.
Just,
Yeah, I guess the...
reason you'd think.
Yeah, the Bank of England's head bean counter claimed the quote was intended to be both ironic and sincere. It's two things. It captures much of Austen's spirit. That is the quote. You can read it straight. There's no enjoyment like reading, and we agree with that. If you know her work, you can enjoy the irony of that. Draws out some of the aspects of her social satire. It works on many levels.
Yeah, you're not fucking Monty Python. You're the Bank of England, goddammit.
Yeah, you're not supposed to do subtlety.
Yeah. It's a fucking 10-pound note.
Yeah.
Made of...
Give me money.
It's like animal fat or something like that that vegans are not happy about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God, just...
we go. Just whatever.
I swear, people, ever since the internet age, some people are just trying to be way too cute for their own good.
Yeah.
Anyway, oh god, and speaking of internet bullshit, so in Sweden they had a public vote to name one of their trains, and the vote came in, and it's going to be called Train... Trainy McTrain Face.
Yep. So this is from...
I didn't learn the first time.
The MTR Express... train operator said, this is news that we received with joy by many, not just in Sweden. They've essentially held up that they plan to actually do this.
Mm-hmm.
Not like Bodie McBoatface, which they said, we'll go with David Attenborough for the name of this.
Yeah. They made Bodie McBoatface the little submarine that they deployed. But,
And they also named another one Glenn.
Hmm.
Which I guess is named after a famous Swedish soccer team in the 80s that featured four players named Glenn, which is an uncommon name in Sweden.
Yeah. Mm. So, Trainy McTrainface is going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Well, at least Sweden will follow through with it, so that's good.
All right, and in science news, it appears now that after some study, scientists have concluded that the Tyrannosaurus Rex probably could not run, probably only walk about 20 kilometers at a time, but speed as far as 20. So it probably couldn't actually run after Jeff Goldblum.
About 20 kilometers per hour.
Mm-hmm. In hindsight, that kind of makes sense when you consider just how big T-Rexes were. If they ran any faster than that, I'm pretty sure the bones in their legs would snap.
Yeah.
That's what they are saying.
Mm-hmm.
That project used a highly realistic computer simulation to predict how T-Rex moved and showed that running would have been impossible because its skeleton just isn't strong enough.
Mm. Right.
And so... it obviously wouldn't be able to chase Jeff Goldblum.
No.
Hmm.
I mean, if you look at, like, some of the larger mammals we have here, like, elephants and hippos and rhinoceri, whatever, they are particularly slow creatures.
Hippos in the water are supposed to be really fast.
Yeah, but that's in water.
Yeah.
On land, it's different.
Elephants
can do a pretty good sprint, but for only very short distances. The idea that the T-Rex couldn't really run makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I just kind of did the math, and that's only about 12 miles an hour, 12 and a half miles an hour.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, the top speeds calculated for T-Rex are still beyond those of most fast human joggers or distance runners, and would be rather frightening to behold.
Oh, I'm sure. On the fact that it's a T-Rex.
Yeah.
And it says, referring to a scene in the sci-fi film, he added, it might well have caught Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park had he stayed outside the Jeep and in the slippery mud.
Yeah. Of course, if he'd been in the Jeep, then he could have just sort of...
They just drove off.
Just done a good 30, just keep going at 20 or 30 miles, and he could just look back and go, nyan, nyan, nyan.
Yeah, just put it in cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so... in more science news, up in the Swiss Alps, a glacier receded, and when people went up there to look after the glacier had receded, they discovered the remains of a couple that had disappeared 75 years ago.
Yep.
Yeah, that's kind of grim.
And they figure out it's probably this couple that disappeared in August 15th, 1942.
Yep.
Parents of seven children went to milk their cows and disappeared.
Mm. That is...
Lynch, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah.
Possibly.
I've had a friend who, acquaintance who, climbed... Mount Everest and a few years ago, and one of the things that they basically tell you when you get ready to climb it is expect to see some corpses, because they will be there,
because
they can't do anything with them.
Yeah, they're just kind of stuck there.
But next up, thanks to a partnership between Google Maps and the International Space Station, you can now go up there on use Google Maps and take a look around.
Yeah.
You can actually see. Wow, this thing's a lot more ragtag looking than I thought it was.
Well, yeah, it is kind of modules put together.
Yeah.
You can just they have like little hot spots, and it just tells you what these different things are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a Canadarm. Too. I don't know what it is. It's not clicking for me.
There yeah, it is. Like
you gotta click on a lot the name, not the circle.
Yeah.
As a lot of folks know, a lot of the work they do is done in zero gravity, so you can see a lot of the way the stuff's angled. That's definitely like they got a laptop sideways.
Yeah.
They got the
because you got to secure that stuff to the walls, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Or else it's just going to float away.
Yep. camera. All kinds of neat stuff.
You can see how this would be great for like the Google Maps VR stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you got a cardboard or a Daydream VR kit, probably check that out in there. Because I know that Street View does work in the... Google Daydream and cardboard, so
it kind of works on the Vive version as well. It's just not great because it's essentially tries to figure out what everything looks like at Street View from the aerial photos, which looks like what happens occasionally when I play PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, where it fails to load in the high res geometry and textures. Like this is kind
blobs.
Of a building blob, but I can't get in the doors because they don't exist yet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next up in movie news. Music news. Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day and Tim Armstrong from Rancid are forming a supergroup called the Armstrongs.
This could be really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got their first single up now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Called if there was ever a time.
Yeah. Mm. So you got the sort of Green Day's pop punk thing with Rancid's semi pop punk thing.
Yeah.
Right. Which, I say that which is unfair because a lot of Rancid's stuff was very much old school punk rock for a long time, but
yeah.
And I guess sales of this single all proceeds will benefit 924 Gilman, a nonprofit all-ages punk venue in East Bay where Green Day and Rancid played in the early years.
Yep.
That's cool.
I heard about that during their behind the music special. There's like an all-ages punk thing. Unfortunately, those types of venues are very rare, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Sadly, because it kind of sucks that, you know, there aren't a lot of punk clubs to begin with.
Yeah. It's that whole reputation that they ended up earning.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, CBGB's closed down a few years ago, and...
Ooh, I didn't know about that either.
Oh, yeah. It's been like a good almost decade now.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure. I think the dude who owned it just retired.
Yeah, it was one of those things.
The punk, CBGB's punk explosion happened way back in the 70s, so...
Yeah, I would have thought one of the people who benefited from that might have taken it over, and... Wow.
No.
Well, anyway. Next up...
It's just like that they came together and it's like, hey, we both have the same last name. Let's just name our band after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Next up, in yet another example of anime getting the live-action treatment, One Piece is getting a live-action TV show.
With the Prison Break producers.
Oh.
Edelston.
No, thanks.
Yeah.
That's kind of a ridiculous thing. I want to see this.
So much nope.
See, if this had happened in Japan, I would have been all about it, because they could have nailed the casting perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but this is just going to be, bad American casting.
Well, this is the same guy that's also working on
Luffy. He would have been brilliant. He's already cosplayed him, and he's played a character loosely based on him. So that would have been brilliantly, and I'm sure he would have done it too, if not demanded it. But
they didn't ask him.
Yeah, the producer for this is also. One of the producers on the live-action Cowboy Bebop show.
And we still have our doubts about that one. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
I just like any idea to adapt a show that is, 800 episodes at this point? Something ridiculous? Like,
well, they're not going to run out of material.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Well, the manga has been running since 1998, so...
Yeah.
Wow, I just realized how old I am.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this is adapted.
Yeah.
Same for the Bebop.
You've got a ton of material, but you don't necessarily need all of it.
Yeah.
We're going to go at that slow pace that it does.
Well, anyway, next up we've got... We just found out who is going to be the new Doctor in the new season of Doctor Who. And it's Jodie Whittaker. It's the it's the 13th Doctor and the first female Doctor in the show's history. Well, franchise's history.
The internet...
is divided, to say the least.
Is divided.
Of course
the Doctor has to be a man. Of course it does.
Yeah, I think of the older Doctors from the 80s was saying it's supposed to be a man because it's supposed to be a role model for the boys.
I don't remember names, but it was a Twitter argument between the actors for the 5th and 6th Doctors.
Yeah, both in the 80s. Yeah, that's like, no, you're a fool. he's like happy to have a female 80s. Doctor that his 4 or 5 daughters can look up to. It's like, change is good.
Yeah. Change is good.
Yeah.
Conservatives.
There's a lot of...
This... Honestly, I've never really cared that much for Doctor Who anyway, so it doesn't really affect me all that much.
Yeah. It doesn't affect me that much, but it's...
But I can still get behind, you know...
Yeah, it's a nerdy thing that's been around for decades.
Since the 60s.
Somehow. Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll probably be around for much longer.
Yeah. Literally started as an educational show for little kids.
Mm-hmm.
That is literally how Doctor Who started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the one Doctor Who was defending this choice, one of his daughters is married to Peter Capaldi, who was the last Doctor.
Hmm.
So he has the weird Doctor Who family.
Yeah. So. Anyways.
Hmm. All right. Well, next up, we have got a Netflix original movie starring Will Smith coming out in December 22nd, a couple days before Christmas, called Bright. And, wow.
It's an interesting thing that I'm actually looking forward to seeing how it turns out. It's basically a cop drama where instead of just being humans in this world, there are also orcs and elves and fairies and all that sort of stuff. And now Will Smith is a cop on like the LAPD and gets paired with an orc played by Joel Edgerton.
Yep.
And sort of they come upon an elf with a actual magic wand, which is apparently the first they've ever seen that. And now they have to go on an adventure to stop whatever plot is going on with this.
Yep.
Okay, this sounds ridiculous, and I think I'm going to watch it. And
yeah.
It's like Men in Black with orcs and elves and shit like
it's
that.
It's the whole urban fantasy thing. I'm surprised it actually took this long for it to make its way over.
Yeah. I'd really like them to adapt the Iron Druid series, but
it'll take a while, but anyway, so yeah, take a look at that trailer, because
there's one knock on this whole thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The director, guess what he directed?
I'm afraid to
ask. Suicide Squad.
Oh. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Oh.
This could go badly.
Yeah. But
thankfully, it won't cost me anything to watch it. So.
That was the sound of every butt in the room clenching.
Yeah, they make sure to mention that in the trailer. It's like, oh, that's not the best way to do that.
I thought the orc makeup looked familiar. But anyway, so from something that looks mad to something that actually looks amazing, we got the trailer for The Disaster Artist. So, for those of you who don't know, this is a biopic that's based on the book by Greg Sestero. It is the true account of the making of Tommy Wiseau's famous opus, The Room. And basically, the trailer is them reenacting the 37 or so takes it took to get Tommy to do the "Oh, hi, Mark" scene. You remember the one where he comes out of the door onto the roof with a water bottle going, "I did not hit her. I did not hit her. That's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not." Oh, hi, Mark. That one.
Yeah.
Which, this makes me want to watch that now.
Yeah, so
how the hell isn't this all over the internet still at this point?
Well, for those who don't know, Tommy Wiseau is being played by James Franco, and holy shit, he is almost perfect.
Yeah, he's doing a good job.
Yeah, he's directing, producing, and starring in the movie.
Yep. His brother is also in it, too, I'm pretty sure.
Franco is in it.
Yeah.
He
plays the guy that hugs him after he successfully does that scene.
Yeah.
Seth Rogen is the director.
Yeah, it's Greg Sestero. Yeah, that's the character he's playing. Seth Rogen is sort of acting as the I guess co-director, or whatever, because Tommy was that incompetent.
And I guess Tommy Wiseau is also starring in the movie at some point.
Yeah, he's probably going to show up in there.
Let's
somewhere.
See who else is in here: Josh Hutcherson, Zac Efron, Hannibal Buress, Melanie Griffin, Sharon Stone, Jackie Weaver. There's also a couple other people I saw in there that. Oh, here's more people. Andrew Santino. Who else? Allison Brie is in there.
Mm.
Greg Sestero's in there. He's a casting agent. So, Christopher Mintz-Plasse is Sid.
I'm hoping other than Sestero, they actually got some of the other people from the actual movie in there. Yeah. At least his cameos
in there.
Or walk-on, something like that.
Even Kate Upton is in there in Judd Apatow.
For some reason.
But yeah, I cannot wait to see this.
This looks
stupid. Directed by James Franco, producer James, Evan Goldberg, Seth Rogen, sort of all that crowd of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, if Franco's in it, then Seth Rogen is going to be in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Him and Jonah Hill. Like, it's... Yeah. It's pretty much required. So look at that trailer. It's amazing.
It's out December 1st. I guess they already showed this at South by Southwest in March.
Yeah.
Bryan Cranston, Zach Braff, J.J. Abrams. Jeez, they just called in all of it. Lizzie Kaplan, Kristen Bell, Keegan-Michael Key, Adam Scott, Danny McBride, and Tommy Wiseau.
Yep. Tommy's in there. I thought so. Holy crap. And just as a reminder, remember that in the original movie, Tommy had to overdub his voice after shooting because his lines in the actual shoot were almost incomprehensible.
And that's still what you got.
Yep.
Just a reminder, that is the Tommy that James Franco is playing.
Yeah.
Did they ever release the original version?
Tommy probably burned it.
Could have made more money. Here's the original version.
Tommy is notoriously protective of that movie and its print. If he does have it, he's probably got it locked away in a safe somewhere.
So he pulled a. I don't know, I'm trying to think. The Star Wars stuff, the original trilogy.
Lucas. Yeah.
Pulled that on. It's like, I don't have it anymore, even though I keep everything.
Yeah, I'm still convinced that that movie was basically partly a money laundering scheme.
I don't know, maybe we'll find out in the movie.
And now we get into the Nickelodeon revival. First thing we got is we got the trailer for the upcoming Rocko's Modern Life reboot called Static Cling. And
it looks perfect.
It's like nothing has changed.
Nope, except they're in modern times.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is perfect.
Yeah.
Like, hey, it's not the 90s anymore.
it's my childhood there.
Yeah. it does really well. Like it literally looks like it's just like the series never ended. Like they had the same studio, the same artists, the same animators.
It's like they went on vacation for 20 years and then came back.
Yeah. Also, we've got another one, Hey Arnold. They're bringing back Hey Arnold. And again, it looks like nothing has changed. It's called The Jungle Movie. Just watch it if you get a chance. I wasn't as big a fan of Hey Arnold back in the day. So
me neither.
Not as big a reaction from me as the Rocko one was.
It had its fan base.
Oh, yeah.
I like
kind of ahead of its time in some ways, too. We also got the trailer for a movie called Proud Mary, which is basically first of all, the fact that they had the Ike and Tina Turner version of Proud Mary in the background during the trailer is a plus in my book. But, it's basically about a woman who is an assassin, and that's about all you need to know.
Yeah, it's not what you'd think it is. Check this out. It actually looks kind of good.
Yeah, it's kind of going for that Jackie Brown vibe.
Yeah.
Next up, we've got Professor Marston and the Wonder Women, which this is a biopic that tells the story of William Moulton Marston, the psychologist who invented both the lie detector and was the creator of Wonder Woman. Well, I say he invented the lie detector. He actually did not invent the lie detector, but he created the systolic blood pressure test, which is one of the aspects of the polygraph machine.
Okay.
It talks about specifically his, shall we say, unorthodox relationship he had with his wife and girlfriend, who both lived in the same house with him. And he had children by both of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, if it works. But it's awesome. You got to look at it. You know, considering the success of the Wonder Woman movie, I hope this does well.
Yeah, this will get some views, as they say.
Yeah. And next up, we have got a film... the next movie from Guillermo del Toro, called The Shape of Water. It's Guillermo del Toro, so you kind of know what you're getting into.
Yep.
It's going to be weird.
Going to be weird. It's going to be wonderful. And it's probably going to give you nightmares for a couple weeks.
Yep. And then you're going to watch it again because it was amazing.
Yes.
And it's kind of about this deaf woman that's working at this high-security government lab.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have some sort of weird aquatic creature that she befriends and then tries to break them out.
Mm-hmm.
Why does this sound like Free Willy all of a sudden?
Because it is.
Mm. Okay.
That is exactly what it freaking is. What we have next is, we don't actually have a trailer for it, it's just an announcement, but it's an announcement that set off kind of a bombshell. So the showrunners for Game of Thrones, as everybody knows, Game of Thrones is fixing to wrap up its last season.
Just split the two seasons.
Yeah, because of course.
Yeah.
And the showrunners have already announced what their next project is going to be. It's going to be an original project. It's not going to be based off of another property. It's called Confederate. And what it is it's an alternate history story about the quote-unquote Third American Civil War. Well, they say Third American. It should be Second American Civil War. Because in this universe, the Confederacy actually succeeded in their aim to secede from the United States and become their own independent nation. And so much of the story is about sort of the DMZ between the Union and the Confederacy and the fact that, you know, slavery still exists there.
Yeah.
In the modern era. And holy shit, the way people reacted to this. Where should I start? So, first of all, I definitely want to see this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we saw what they did with Game of Thrones and that show basically blew everyone out of the water.
Yeah.
So we know they can make good stuff. But you got to remember, you're looking at the stuff they did for Game of Thrones and now sort of superimpose that on an alternate universe based on American history. Specifically the subject of slavery. And you can kind of see why this might...
Yeah, that might ruffle a few feathers, I would guess.
And you consider the fact that... Here's the thing. They've been talking about... Apparently, they've been talking about making this project for several years now. It just so happened that they finally got a chance to work on it right around this particular presidency.
You know, I mean, they've been busy with Game of Thrones. They've been busy wrapping that up. They haven't exactly had time.
Well, I mean, Obama was still president when Game of Thrones started. And I want to see this because I want to see what they're going to do with it. Because as somebody who lives in the South and who is basically surrounded by, you know, plaques and statues and memorials and battlefields from that era. And, you know, we still have people basically still fighting for the Confederacy to this very day, as small a number as they may actually be. I kind of think that this may be something that we kind of need.
Yeah.
As controversial it may be, and as even a little bit, it may even end up being mishandled in a little way. But we need it because we need to make that war real for the modern generation. And remind that this wasn't just some romantic Gone with the Wind fantasy. This was a blood and guts conflict that killed more Americans than any other conflict in our nation's history. It tore families apart. It tore the nation apart. It brought all of the contradictions of America to fore where no one could ignore them anymore. And it required the death of hundreds of thousands of men for it to finally come to an end. And, you know, I live just a few miles away from Andersonville Prison, which was the infamous Confederate POW camp, and that shit is a nightmarescape. It really is. Just look at the photographs from they took from that place. If if they hadn't told you, you would have thought it would have been from like Auschwitz or Dachau, as how horrible some of those men looked. This is still it's been hundreds of years. It's been over 100 or so years, but it's still very real for a lot of people, and. The legacy is still felt. And the thing is, you know, the idea of having a narrative of where the South won the Civil War is not new. It's been, you know, a trope of alternate history for decades. I mean, Harry Turtle
gets played with almost as much as the concept of Axis victory in the in World War II.
Yeah. I mean, like everybody knows, you know, Harry Turtledove basically made his name on writing this type of stuff, but there were writers that did it like decades before he was doing it. So the thing was, what really kind of got me was all those people who were acting like this was some brand new thing, like like, you know, oh my God, such a concept, it's so horrible. And I've read, like, at least 30, 35 books with this very concept.
Yeah.
As far back as high school. And, but yeah, this isn't going to, you know, this is the showrunners of Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is a great show. So I have faith in what they can do.
There will be no punches pulled.
No, they will.
No fucks given.
No. No matter how triggered your little white alt-right snowflake friends may be. It is going to be very obvious. Slavery was not some, you know, antebellum fantasy. It was a brutal, awful institution that brutalized not just the slaves, but the slave masters as well. There was no way you could be a moral slave owner. It is a stain on our nation's history that we are still going through the trouble of washing away from. It's so horrible that there are so many people who will go to, you know, plantations or Monticello or whatever, and, you know, they'll discuss the slavery topic, and, you know, there'll be people who's like, well, surely there were some that didn't mistreat their slaves so bad. You know, completely missing the goddamn point. Or, you know, people saying, like, look, I don't want to talk about this. This stuff is bringing down America. You know, stuff like that, which I've heard.
And if we don't talk about it, it'll bring America down even more.
So I really want to see what they're going to do with this. Yep. My interest has been piqued. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Expect the first trailer 2018 probably.
Yep. And it'll be interesting to see the Game of Thrones showrunners get a hold of something that they owe nothing to any source material.
Yeah, well, they've kind of thrown away the source material about a long time ago at this point.
Yeah. Well, kind of out of necessity.
Yeah, because the
story. It's either that or do filler arcs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they know the basically how Martin is going to end it, but basically they're just kind of interpreting.
They're
based
kind of freeballing it.
Yeah. So.
But
it's basically their own thing at this point.
Yeah. All right. So finally, we've got our D23 news roundup. We're going to go through these kind of quickly, seeing as we're over 2 hours, and also because there's honestly not a whole lot to go into detail over other than the subjects themselves. First things first is we actually got a trailer for the film adaptation of Madeline L'Engle's classic children's novel, A Wrinkle in Time.
Yep.
I read this book back when I was a kid, back when I also hated reading. Holy crap, they got it down.
Yeah.
They really did.
Disney has kind of been on a roll with this sort of thing lately, so
yeah.
Not really too surprised.
So for those of you who don't know what A Wrinkle in Time is about, it's basically about these kids whose father goes missing after he discovers, for lack of a better term, wormhole technology. He finds a way to be able to travel through the fifth dimension. And in their attempts to find it, they come across the Miss W's, one of whom is played by Oprah Winfrey. And basically, it's about a, like, you know, time travel and multiverse stuff. One of the creepiest things they come across is the identical houses, which you see in the trailer.
Yeah.
It is unnerving, to say the least.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, though, you know what I didn't see? No centaurs.
No, it may just be not done yet. So.
I say that because anybody who's ever seen the covers for the book, centaurs usually are
on it.
Front and center for a lot of them. But, oh, well.
Yeah, just might be one of those things they're saving.
Yeah. Next
I did
up,
like that the father is Chris Pine, so Captain Kirk found his way into this.
Yep.
Apparently Zach Galifianakis is in the movie too.
Yeah.
To see what the hell he's doing in here.
Yeah.
What's going to be interesting is seeing, because the thing about A Wrinkle in Time, and especially Madeline L'Engle herself, is that Madeline L'Engle was very religious, and her books tended to have a strong religious tone to them. Not like in the over, you know, the ham-fisted C.S. Lewis, Tim LaHaye type, but it was there.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. And it's especially going to be funny seeing if any of the evangelical Christian community gets upset about it, considering the fact that Madeline L'Engle wasn't just a devout Christian. She was a Christian universalist, which meant she believed in universal salvation. In other words, she believed everyone goes to heaven. Yeah. That's not going to go over well with the evangelical crowd.
Nope, it won't.
But all right, so up next we've got Mark Ruffalo. He basically just said straight up that a Hulk movie is probably not happening.
At least not for now.
Yeah.
And he talks about in the interview that basically Universal has the rights to a standalone Hulk movie and has no interest in doing a deal with Marvel for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't want money.
Yeah. It's like Sony's ponied up to work with Marvel, and they're reaping the rewards right now.
Yeah. Homecoming is doing really well.
Yeah. It's like Fox would be smart to get with Marvel to, say, get the Fantastic Four in shape, because they've made, what, 3 movies at this point with Fantastic Four?
They all sucked, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, they've all been utter complete garbage.
Yeah.
I do like this interview. Don Cheadle jokes that he's a bad actor, so they don't want to work with him for that either.
So.
Yeah.
Okay.
We also found out the who's going to be the recently found out from Disney, the live-action adaptation of Aladdin, and who is going to be the cast. Wow, that was fast, actually.
Yeah.
Because those of you don't know, we talked about this last week, and we knew next to nothing. But now we know that Aladdin is going to be played by Maina Masood, Jasmine will be played by Naomi Scott, and the genie will be played by Will Smith.
Yeah, okay. The Aladdin casting isn't bad. Well, Will Smith can play just about anything, so...
Yeah.
Genie doesn't seem like a far stretch for him.
Yeah, it's just, as a lot of people will know, you know, Robin Williams. It's kind of hard to...
It's kind of hard to top Robin Williams, so...
So he's just got to do his own thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to see Will Smith trying to do Robin Williams. That's just not going to work. So he has to make that his own.
Yeah. Go out there and be Will Smith and it'll work.
Naomi Scott would actually make a pretty good Jasmine, because she looks like her.
Yeah. The important thing is that all three people can sing, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's important.
All rap, basically.
Well, yeah. Well.
At least as, you know...
Oh God.
At least as Will Smith is concerned.
Yeah. A rapping genie? Well, I guess I could see worse things happening.
Yeah, it was called Shazam.
Yeah.
No, Kazam. Or what was it? Yeah.
Shazam is the movie that doesn't actually exist.
Unfortunately. Next up, we got a glimpse of Mary Poppins Returns, which is being starring Emily Blunt, and it's coming out Christmas of next year.
Yep.
Let's
talk about how it's an actual sequel to the original.
Mm-hmm.
I know they got Dick Van Dyke on the cast.
Wow.
Oh my God. He's old.
Man. Yeah.
I didn't even know he was still with us.
Yes, he is. He is in his 90s and still kicking.
Wow.
Just as long as they don't ask him to kick in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just fall over.
Although, seeing him go chim-chiminy, you know, that would actually be pretty neat to see.
Yeah.
I'll have weird, heartwarming childhood feelings.
Yeah.
Because I freaking loved that movie when I was a kid.
Yeah. How do you do a direct sequel to Mary Poppins, though? I guess we'll find out.
Well, there are more books in the series, so...
Yeah, I suppose.
And then we got Toy Story 4. Being directed by Josh Cooley.
Who did Up, Ratatouille, and Inside Out.
Yeah.
So he's got pretty good repertoire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And good at kicking you in the nuts with emotions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
So,
Toy Story kind of needs a little bit of a bump after Toy Story 3. That one was a little weak. But.
I don't know, that ending got to me.
Yeah, that ending really got to people.
I guess John Lasseter is not co-directing this, so it'll be just Josh Cooley.
Yeah.
And then next up, we got Incredibles 2. Yes, the sequel is finally happening.
Yeah, that goddamn time.
Yeah, and this time it's going to be focusing on Elastigirl.
Yeah, so... she is sort of going out on this adventure, and Mr. Incredible is hanging out at home, being the stay-at-home father.
At different times.
Yeah. Bob faced new challenges in the Sovereign Realm, which he never quite mastered in the first film. He gets to stay home to face his biggest challenge yet. And the weird thing about this is directly following up the first movie, so no time has passed.
Wow.
So they just kind of switch.
Yeah. That's
strange, but okay. I'm sure they'll make it work.
It would have been nice if they had gone at least like a few years later.
Yeah.
So the kids would be a little bit older, and the baby would be a kid.
Yeah.
And because like the first movie was made before smartphones, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're gonna address any of that or not. There was a great joke in the Rocko's Modern Life trailer about the O phone. It's like, I think Rocko was like, "Where's all the buttons?"
And then finally, we don't know much about it, but they did have a few secret trailers that they played.
We didn't get to see them,
but
yeah,
what
we will we, though.
Yeah. Or I don't know. Did Dandrup get to see these or not?
Yeah, I haven't asked, but he probably did.
All right, they were Avengers: Infinity War, Black Panther, Thor: Ragnarok, and the live-action Lion King.
Which that thing pretty sounds nervous. Like it's pretty cool. The Lion King one, because I got John Oliver. He's playing Zazu.
Oh God, that's perfect.
I believe Hugh Jackman is Scar.
That's actually not a bad fit.
No.
Donald Glover's in it. I think he's Simba.
I'm actually looking forward to that one. I don't know. I liked The Lion King. I also liked Aladdin, so I'm just hoping they don't ruin either of them.
I freaking love The Lion King. I thought it was an amazing movie, even if it was a ripoff, but...
Yeah, I won't get into that. That's something for a random factoid.
No, that's a subject for another episode, because that story is really convoluted.
Yeah.
And of course you throw in a little Hamlet, and you basically got The Lion King. But anyway, so I do believe that is going to be our show for the week.
Yep.
All right, so I would like to remind our listeners that if you are wanting to write into the show, ask us a question, have something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's L-E-T-S, Let's Week, W-E-E-K, Enders, E-N-D-E-R-S, @gmail.com. On top of iTunes, you can also see our little show on basically everything, Google Play, RSS, your toaster oven, probably your printer too. And not just any printer, like literally those old jet printers. If it can play Doom, it can play us.
Yeah.
Also tune in Apple Podcasts.
All those things.
Yeah. So, with that, I have been your host, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Anolfo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Elogia, I'd like to say goodnight. And
repeal gravity.